Welcome to the SaaS Sales Performance Podcast, the show for anyone wanting to be on the cutting edge of SaaS tech sales. We provide the tools you need to take advantage of the rapidly changing sales environment. We bring you the leading experts on the front lines of SaaS sales and distill down our famous masterclasses into bite-sized practical tips. Your hosts will be Ash Alley and Matt Milligan. And on this podcast, we will be transforming your ability to sell more and smash your targets.
Welcome back to another episode of the SaaS Sales Performance Podcast. And we're continuing this series of episodes with our enablement leaders theme. Delighted to be joined today by another fantastic emerging enablement leader. Today's guest joins us from a really interesting business in the cybersecurity space, fraud prevention. Today's guest has built her career from a sales background and has pursued enablement off the back of experience working in a number of different companies in sales roles as an IC and as a leader. Today's guest is Georgina Baird. Georgina is the head of sales enablement at Sayon. Sayon are the fraud fighters platform based remotely, and as we were talking offline, heading for global domination by the sounds of things. Georgina, welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. Really excited to be here.
Georgina, we both come from the same Sales Enablement Pro event in London today. I know you've already done a panel today, so you've been in front of the camera and the microphone a lot. Appreciate you saving the last of your kind of energy reserves for this recording.
Of course. Thought it might be worth getting a whole day of media in. I feel like a celeb. Really, really pleased that we could find a time to make this work.
We're going to have to get you an agent to manage your media appearances.
100%. I'm down. Like, if anyone's listening and wants to be my agent, drop me a message.
Well, I wonder if there is an enabler out there who actually has an agent. I'm trying to think. There's got to be some sales influencers out there who do.
I think any of the people who are at every single conference, and if they haven't, they absolutely need one. If they're not being paid for their appearances, say some really important things. So they need to be getting paid for the things that they say.
For sure. And I guess if they're not being paid for their appearances there, then how are they earning money?
Exactly. Because there are some people who are phenomenal at what they do, and they're at so many events. How big is your team to be able to support you being out and doing all of these things? Or can you please teach me your prioritization and like time management? Because I could not do it.
Yeah, it's so true. There really are some familiar faces which you see at pretty much every event.
Absolutely. The cool thing is they have something new to say every time, and I come away going, yeah, I could still listen to you a bit more. Like, you said some really cool stuff.
That's a skill. Coming up with new original content on an almost daily basis is a skill. I don't know how you would do that in a pre-ChatGPT world.
I have no idea. ChatGPT has got me through some big content blocks and some big kind of mind blank. I don't have anyone I can ask in the office because I'm working from home and the dog won't help. ChatGPT is where I'm going. I need a solution.
Could be an interesting topic for today's conversation. I just love how we've come up with that on the fly. Yeah. GPT for enablers in 2023. Let's start with a quick intro. So Georgina, I obviously spoke about your current project and the function that you're building at Sayon at the moment. But for our listeners, you know, in the enablement community and the sales leadership community, help all of our listeners understand what your journey's been so far. And the question I always like to ask first is, how did you end up in the world of enablement?
It's a really good question. And I would love to say that I was one of those kids at school that was like, enablement is my dream. And that's what I'm going to do.
Has anyone ever said that?
Absolutely not. I don't think anybody, kind of when you're thinking about what you want to be, does anyone know enablement exists? I just don't think it's a thing. Sadly, I wanted to be a vet, but it was nowhere. I'm too squeamish and I'm not intelligent enough. So sadly, that was out of the question. But I remember growing up, the one thing I said I would never do was sales. I was like, I don't like salespeople. I don't want to be a salesperson. I didn't really like it. 16-year-old me was very sassy and apparently very anti-salespeople. And so I decided I was going to go into project management, and then very quickly realized that actually project management is delivering the projects that the salespeople get paid for. And very quickly, my mind changed. So I moved into sales as a BDR, CDR, depending on what you call them in your company, working originally in fintech, then moved to my first startup where I did a similar role, looking after some slightly bigger businesses, sort of supporting the kind of semi-enterprise space. And it was there that I realized you can't be a successful salesperson if you would rather see the team succeed than yourself, because it is not an acceptable thing for your sales leader on the last day of the month you to say, yeah, but look at all these people that I got to their target. Sorry, but nowhere near. That's not going to get you promoted and not going to get you any success in an IC role. So I moved to look after an inside sales team and then made the move over into enablement because I realized that I loved everything about sales, I love the theory. I love the rapport build, the relationships, the thrill on the last day of the month going to come in or not come in. I just don't like doing the selling, which is definitely not great English, but we'll go with it. And so actually I realized that I wanted to be the person that would give the people in my teams that moment where they go, ah, okay, I did that. I've improved. That thing was easier. That thing's always been really difficult, but now I know how to do it. And actually getting, I now get the buzz from the success of the team rather than focusing purely on kind of my success as an individual salesperson as an IC. I kind of fell into enablement, which again, I didn't really know was a thing that existed until an old manager of mine said, yeah, you should think about that. That's kind of how I ended up in enablement.
Interesting journey, hearing about the manager that made that intervention to kind of nudge. I always think about career journeys as moments of little nudges. So you have one conversation with someone who kind of nudges you in this direction, and then you meet with a customer who gives you this piece of feedback and then they nudge you in that direction. How did that conversation come about? Was that through like a one-to-one with that manager?
It was a one-to-one with one of the best managers I've ever had, who sat me down and said, look, I think you're doing a good job managing the team, but actually we have a need for something a bit more independent. I would almost say like team agnostic, just kind of going, okay, I need you to sit in the middle of a lot of different teams instead. We don't have what's often referred to as like the glue between different teams, and we need someone to do that. And I said, yeah, that sounds great. Okay, I can be glue, but like, what does that glue do? I don't understand what enablement is. You need to kind of tell me. And he ran me through the things. I said, oh, it's really funny because I love all of those things. And you're, yes, that's exactly why I've suggested it, as it was the most obvious thing in the world. You know, this could be a thing you're really good at, especially when it's a thing you don't know exists or you've never heard of before. Even if it's just putting a name to something that you don't really know that it is a thing. It's just a collection of different things that you really enjoy. Finding out that it's an official term, I think is quite exciting.
Let's talk about enablement at startups specifically, because I know you've had some really interesting experiences at earlier stage companies. I was at a conference last week, Georgina, and this is, I think, continues to be a challenge in our industry. There were 4 presenters on the day, I think, who all opened up their presentations with a definition of enablement. You know what I'm going to say. All 4 definitions were pretty different. One of the hypotheses that I've been reflecting upon is that my personal experience is that enablement means something different depending on the size and scale of the company you're at. Enablement at a startup, you would define as something quite different to enablement at a public company with dozens of enablers and thousands of reps. Help us, if you will. Well, first of all, how do you think about that kind of definition of enablement and those things that your manager sat you down and walked you through to get you into the profession in the first place? And I'd love to hear your thoughts on what enablement at startups looks like.
I knew you were going to say that the definition is different. All you have to do is look at job specs of enablement, and you struggle to find any single job spec that had the same requirement. They tend to either be kind of product marketing led, training and coaching led, or big strategic initiatives. And I think some of that has to do with the size of business, but I think it also has to do with the size of team, the maturity of the business, and also to an extent, the kind of business you're in. So my definition of enablement in its most basic form is to help teams be more effective and efficient and contribute to business initiative, which is quite a vague definition. But I think that ultimately, especially within a startup, you don't know what's coming next. There are a lot of things that you'll be doing are brand new, especially if you're in a fairly new business. There are things that you may have never done before, new verticals the business is going into, new countries, new sizes of teams, different seniority of team members. There are so many variables that it is impossible to set a really rigid definition of the things that you are responsible for, because who knows what's going to happen tomorrow. And if you are trying to help the business be successful, you need to be flexible to whatever it is the business needs. One day that might be spending an entire day listening back to call recordings and coaching. The next, it might be sat with the leadership team discussing a new market to enter. So I think if you focus on effective and efficient, that kind of encompasses everything. But then again, I think it does depend on the size of team you have. So that's kind of my startup experience in terms of what it means for different businesses. I spoke to somebody today at the event who said, oh yeah, I've only got a team of 40. And if you're going into enablement in a team of 40, you probably have a much more focused remit than you do if you are a team of 1 or a team of 2. You will probably be focused on a market, a vertical, a specific area of enablement. And therefore, you can be a lot more specific with your definition. If you're a smaller team, you have to be everything. I think that's where a lot of the kind of variables come in, but also dependent on what you need at that moment in time. It depends what kind of hat you end up wearing for the day, the week, or just forever.
Yeah, it's the jack of all trades enabler, the superwoman team of one.
I mean, I'll take that. I'll take superwoman. I remember speaking to somebody once who said, you are either the thinker and you come up with the big strategic initiatives and then you have a team that execute, or you are more on the doing side and you are the person that delivers the project, delivers the ideas, and are kind of given direction by someone else. If you have the luxury of a bigger team, you can have a mixture of those two people. If you're a smaller team, you have to be both, because if you can come up with all the great ideas in the world, and if all you want to do is be on the ground doing the smaller stuff, then it's impossible for you to do bigger scale thinking.
Yeah, I think that's right. There comes a moment in time that you've done the hard work in the early days, which I would argue is almost the hardest enablement job, to be the solo enabler, trying to prove out enablement. You know, if you have been successful in doing that and you've really done, you've put the graft in, so to speak, and demonstrated impact to leadership and built trust with the reps and the managers, I think there's then this inflection point where you move away from that kind of jack of all trades, wearing multiple hats, strategic and operational, and you hopefully earn yourself a bit of a right to then start hiring to replace some of those either functional or role-based enablement responsibilities.
Absolutely. I think it also is, I don't think you can be someone who thinks big and strategic unless you've been on the ground and experienced the stuff on the ground. If you come into a business where there is already an enablement function, you have the knowledge and experience of other people to kind of knowledge dump that on you, and you can absorb that quite quickly. If you're the first person, you need to understand what's going on first before you can make any big decisions. So actually, I remember saying when I joined Sion, I don't want anybody for the first 12 months, because actually, how am I going to manage a team of people if I don't myself understand exactly what it is that we need to focus on, exactly what the business cares about, how each person works, and how the business reacts to new initiatives coming in. I'm kind of coming up to 12 months in, so hopefully it will be kind of a time to bring in some more people to, as you say, take over some of those responsibilities. But I think I would say in any business, you kind of want to do the first 12 months on your own and experience what it's actually like.
Love to come and talk about roles in a minute, but very briefly going back to the definition of enablement. First of all, I think it's a strong definition. Thank you for giving me a fifth definition.
Not so
2 weeks. I think it would rank up there, but still, for me, the greatest definition of enablement I've heard is from one of my clients, Felix at Plio. This actually comes from his son. So the way that his son describes what his dad does is, he says, my dad helps salespeople become the opposite of disabled.
I love that. I think that is a great definition, actually. And the more it sinks in, I think it's a really good definition. It's removing the blockers and the barriers that help a team be incredible. It's a great definition. Get him an agent. Like, get him up on the stage. Like, get him everywhere.
I'm sure he's going to be chuffed that I'll give him an extra shout out for him coming on the show soon as well. Yeah, maybe there's one definition for our listeners to kind of hang on the wall and perhaps even use when you're describing what you do to your friends down the pub.
My friends have no idea what I do. I try and explain it and they still don't know. I think part of that's because generally the view of salespeople is, it kind of varies so much person to person. And when I say I help them be better at sales, they're like, I don't want anyone to call me. The kind of the immediate thought is, well, I don't want it to be any better at convincing me to spend money. Like, I'm very sorry, but that is my entire job.
So we've talked there about, you know, enablement at earlier stage companies. It's a really tough gig, right? There's no getting away from that. How have you found in your experience, Georgina, getting that balance right between all of the reactive or like random acts of enablement that typically come in your first few weeks when you're in the role and sales leadership find out they've now got this new person that they can just throw stuff at? How do you balance that with getting to that point in the first year where you can actually free yourself up to A, go to the bathroom, and B, strategic and prove impact to leadership?
I mean, the first thing is give up on all sleep. Sleep is a complete myth, as are lunch breaks. Just kind of give up on them for about at least your first 12 months. I think it's interesting that sort of the leaders I've worked with over the years tend to fall into one of two camps. You have the leaders who go, oh, great, someone else who can do the stuff that I don't really want to do, or that takes up lots of time, or who is there just as an extra added limb for me and I can just give them stuff. And then on the flip side, you have the leaders that go, no, I'd like to be the one seen to be doing all the things for my team. And I'm actually quite resistant to you coming in because I don't know you and I'm trying to prove my worth as a leader. I don't need someone else doing the things that I should be doing. I think both are challenging in different ways. So the leaders that just want to kind of give you everything, again, kind of going back to this panel at lunchtime, that was one of the questions actually that came up was, how do you push back on people? And, you know, I get someone from the C-suite come down to me and say, this has to be done. And it's a really awkward conversation to push back. And the feedback we sort of gave at the time was, if you're pushing back, it totally depends on why you're pushing back and why you're sort of reprioritizing. But if you're pushing back because it doesn't align with your business objective, then it was an unreasonable request. And you are well within your rights to just say no. Say no nicely, because nobody really wants to have an awkward conversation with a C-level leader that you just go, no, I don't want to do it. You have to explain why. But if it doesn't align with business objectives, then it's just a hard no. Other than that, it probably is either already being done under a different name. And so the requests you're getting for, and I love the term as random acts of enablement, they're probably already being covered by something else you're doing. Because if it's contributing to a business initiative, there are not an infinite number of things you could be doing. So asking the question of actually, can you tell me a bit more about that? Like, what exactly are you trying to achieve? There was something I heard recently that was, I don't want to understand how you want me to do something. I want to understand why you want it to happen. And I don't need you to tell me the how. You tell me what you want. I'll look at it and I'll work out the best way to do it. And then I can tell you whether that's a reasonable request in your time. So you move from these random, urgent, someone once referred to it as the shiny things in enablement, where someone goes, oh, exciting. Like, that could be a cool thing. And they've forgotten about it 5 minutes later. So actually understanding what's important, what do they want to happen? Why do they want it to happen? And then putting them into kind of a priority order and over-communicating. I think over-communicating has been one of my biggest lessons. People need to know exactly what you're doing, when you're doing it. They need to know when their project is coming up, if it's moved timeframes, why. And as soon as you can start to build in that understanding, I guess, that it's not an if, it's a when, then you can start to move into that more strategic relationship of trust. It will get done. I can't do it for you right now because of these three things, but also this other thing I'm doing benefit you as a byproduct. So actually it's okay. You can kind of calm down a little bit. It's coming. Once you've got that, then you can start to think about, okay, I've got some process in place. Now I could look at having other people in my team.
Yeah. As I was listening to your kind of journey there of requests coming in, like, I am so guilty of that in our business. Like, I'll come up with an idea, which I think is the greatest thing in the world. I just kind of expect that it needs to be executed on in the next 48 hours. So I totally relate to that. And I think as well, like a lot of leaders, myself included, are guilty of, you know, we'll have an insight or a conversation with one customer and we'll just come up with an idea. Like, oh my God, that's game changing. We've got to roll that out. And it's being able to actually manage up in a way to say, well, hang on a minute. This is our overall objective. These are the five things that I'm currently working on that we're hoping to deliver by X date. If you want me to do that, like, what else is on my list is going to get pushed further down the road? Is that a good way to manage that?
100%. I think it also leads on to one of the things that I've been feeling quite a lot recently, which is that enablement has to have a place in the decision making. I think in any business, there are always people who will, as you say, kind of come out of a meeting with a customer or have a conversation with somebody else in the team and go, I've got this really cool idea. We should do it. I'm really excited about it. And sometimes they are just like the shiny things and they're actually not that important, but you've just got really hyped up in the moment. But there are other things that come up in much bigger conversations, be it in a revenue leadership meeting, be it in a steering committee, being in whatever meeting it's happening in. If enablement isn't in there, you end up getting second, third hand information and just being asked to deliver. And so actually what happens is inevitably there's disappointment because actually you've come out and gone, here's this really good idea. We came up with a time frame that works for us. But again, we thought about the what and the why. We've not actually involved the person who's going to be doing the how. And so actually the time frames we've come up with don't really work. So now I'm disappointed. And actually, I'm annoyed now because the thing I wanted to happen can't happen how I wanted it to. And so unless you bring enablement into that conversation on the bigger stuff, or be prepared to have a more in-depth conversation about exactly what it is you want and why. Again, not focusing on the how, because that's your kind of executor's position, it becomes really difficult. And it kind of creates that friction between leadership and enablement.
I think it's what my girlfriend describes as solution mode.
Yeah.
Where I'll ask for something to be done and then I'll jump. My brain will automatically start trying to figure out the best way to do it. But ultimately, you know, you've hired a talented enablement professional to lead that side of the business for you to interpret what's important and then understand the best way to drive the outcome rather than...
Exactly. And you've also hired someone who is team agnostic. So I sit as part of the commercial team. I think at the minute we have three different teams that sit under commercial. And then I also support the marketing team as well. Now, I don't have a preference over which one of those teams succeeds or does the best. I want everybody to do really well. I'm aligned to business initiatives, which therefore impact every team. So you will automatically, by default, go to solution mode, depending on the team you're in, because you are focused almost the point of kind of blinkers of making sure your team succeeds. And so actually, if you take a step back and talk to the person who has no preference over which team does the best, you can then work out, actually, here's something you haven't considered that'll impact that team. Here's a project that actually the marketing team are working on that does 80% of the thing that you were trying to do. Or here's the thing that this team's sales leader is doing that's in direct contradiction to the thing you just asked me to do. Unless you kind of consult those people, you end up losing track of the focus and the priorities and not having that kind of holistic view of what's going on. But it's natural to go into solution mode. You just want to fix things, especially I think in smaller businesses. They're like, hey, problem, fix it. I don't want to sit and be in a committee that works out how this gets solved. I just want to solve it. But you hired enablement to be that kind of central glue agnostic kind of team.
It'd be great to talk about. It's got me thinking about how prioritization is not easy, right? And then it's hard when you're team agnostic with multiple senior stakeholders requesting things to decipher what's urgent versus what's important. So talk us through, I mean, what have you found is an effective way of really honing in on understanding what to focus on first and how to spend your time?
It's a really good question, because I think that there's two traps that people tend to fall into. One is the whoever shouts the loudest gets their project done. And the second is the more senior you are, the quicker your project gets done. And both of those are really, really hard to fight against. Especially the seniority one. I think in a lot of my experience in startups, so I have easy access to our C-level. If I get a request from our CEO, I can jump on a Slack call with him and be like, talk me through this. And that's obviously a lot more difficult if you're in a bigger business and you're much further removed from your C-level. But I think in terms of prioritization, I try and bucket requests into different categories. So the way I like to think about it is I've got a couple of big things that are running that are longer term projects, multiple stakeholders. If your request falls into that, it goes into list number one. If on the kind of the opposite end of that, if you've asked me to do something that is fairly small, could be done if a meeting finishes early, that goes into a list at the other end. Depending on which one of those buckets your request falls into, depends on how I do it. If it's a small, it'll be done kind of as and when, then it's this is not a top priority. I'll get around to it when I can. If it's this is going to be a big strategic initiative, then if it aligns with the business priorities, again, I would probably bet you're already doing some of it in a different project you're working on. And so actually it's then just about improving the communication between your stakeholders, not even with you, but just with them. Like, hi, could you have a chat with that other person? You do sit next to them in the office, but you've not told them about your project and they've not told you about theirs. And I think if you're going to push back on delivering something in category one, so delivering a big project, you have to try and make some allowances somewhere else to make sure that you are still contributing to the success of that team, that leader. So that could be, actually, I can't do that thing right now, but what I can offer you, again, it's a when, not an if. I appreciate that it's a big project. I appreciate it's important. It will get done. Here's when I think it will get done. What I can do in the meantime is I can have a meeting with someone in your team who can support you in the meantime to help you start making some progress. I can take something else, maybe a smaller project off your plate to free up more of your time. Or I can sit with you and help you plan how you are going to take this project on. And I will be a support function, I won't be needing it. And I think the big thing about it is just about compromise. Nobody likes feeling like they've been told no or shut down or like, this isn't ever going to happen. And it's about working out how you can still maintain the relationship without compromising the priorities that you have. But ultimately, if your CEO asks you to do something that isn't aligned with the business initiative and it's just that they've decided there's a cool new thing, you have to have the confidence to say, this actually doesn't align with the business initiative we have. Or I can stop doing that, but I think you've got a $20,000 problem over here. Would you like me to fix that first?
Sounds like a good way to pacify the urgent requests that are perhaps not as important as the business objectives.
Absolutely. I think in my experience, at least, urgency tends to be shiny. There's very little. If it was actually urgent, a sales leader would probably do it themselves because it's important and needs to get done. The stuff that tends to get passed for enablement that's urgent tends to be the shiny new things. Then they're like, this would be cool. Yes, it would be cool. But also we have bigger things to focus on right now rather than...
Yeah, and then before you know it, you're kind of spinning in this busy, full type environment where it's pretty hard for you to actually deliver and finish stuff.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing is if you get into that cycle, you lose consistency. I think it's really easy to forget that you actually have two sets of stakeholders in enablement. You have your senior stakeholders that trickle down to you, but then you trickle down to your team. And if you are doing random things here and there, or chopping and changing projects the whole time, or kind of getting halfway through an initiative and then doing complete 180 and doing something else, you lose your reputation, the consistency, and the success of your team. And so in order for you to be successful, it's not just about managing your time, but it's about managing your reputation with your team. Nobody likes to be going through maybe a difficult change. So you're going to roll out some new messaging. That's never a nice move for any team. They're like, oh, great, I've got to unlearn everything I've already learned once and I ought to change it. And like, oh, this is kind of unproven and I'm not a fan of it. If you start rolling that out and then be like, oh, no, guys, actually, we're not going to do that anymore because this request come in and those training sessions I said we were going to have, we're not having them anymore. It's really difficult to come back from that once you've lost that consistency and that reputation of your team.
Yeah, for sure. I'd actually think potentially slightly even bigger than stakeholder groups, revenue leadership or whoever you're reporting to in your enablement role. Yes, sales managers and reps, of course. But a third stakeholder, I think, is the customer.
Yes.
Enablement, we really are also custodians in a way of the quality of what goes out. I feel like this is a real piece that perhaps doesn't get spoken about enough, is like, how are we actually focusing on our responsibilities to deliver really good buying experiences for our customers?
Absolutely. I think quite often when people talk about kind of the big business initiatives, they tend to be around like, we want to grow X percent. We want to up our NDR by X percent. We want to bring on X number of new customers. And they're all very, for want of a better word, like selfishly business focused. They're very like, we as a business want to do these things. And so a lot of initiatives just align to like, how are we going to do that for? And actually you're spot on. If you don't fix the customer relationship, if you don't make the buying experience a positive one, if you don't make sure that every interaction they have with your business is easy and comfortable and friendly and responsive and on time and, you know, phrased correctly, the right messaging and value sold, you can't hit any of the big objectives you have. No one's going to sign up with you if they have a terrible buying experience. So that has to be where you focus. And I think that's one of the main responsibilities of enablement in terms of thinking about your priorities aligned to business objectives. You almost have to translate them out of a different language and into, okay, like that's what we want to do, but what does that actually mean? What goes into that?
Yeah, spot on. And I guess just like a kind of fourth bonus one that I'd add, which I've been thinking about quite a lot recently, is investors and shareholders in the company. You know, if enablement really wants to sort of elevate its status within the organization, like most founding teams or exec teams are being put under pressure by their shareholders and board members at the moment to drive greater sales efficiency. And how do you drive greater sales efficiency?
by delivering more revenue with fewer salespeople or the same number of salespeople? Well, they've got to be better enabled. So enablement has to sit at the heart of doing that. Otherwise, where else is that going to come from? Like, you're not going to get different results by doing the same things that you've always done.
Absolutely not. There's a quote that's something like, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. And it's the same thing. If you want to do more with less, you need to make the less that you have better, which is why kind of with all the kind of changes in the economic climate at the minute, seeing so many enablers being part of rifts and part of restructures and things is really surprising. Because, I mean, I imagine that it's the sales leaders that are taking on that responsibility now, but they don't have the same skill set as enablement do. They have a very different skill set and a very different set of priorities. So if you want to do more with less, but you haven't got someone who is dedicated to nothing but trying to make your team better, it just seems like there's a disconnect somewhere. And it just doesn't really make a huge amount of sense.
Yes, and I think that's definitely the case if they've done a lot of the things that you've covered in the last 25 minutes, right? If they've been intentional about how they prioritize their time, if they have aligned with business objectives, and if they've made an effort to create some kind of at least a competency framework or a measurement framework that can demonstrate progress. Yes, but then at the same time, I understand that there's a lot of enablers out there who haven't been able to do those things and have got stuck in that hamster wheel, right? Of busy, we're too so busy that there's no time to do the more strategic stuff. So in a way, I do kind of get it. Like, I get why, unfortunately, there has those redundancies, but I guess there's hopefully some good learnings that will come out of that in terms of how enablement professionals can implement some of these best practices, which we talk about a lot on this podcast, and we've done, you and I have done today, to hopefully avoid that situation.
Absolutely.
We've covered a lot of ground, Georgina. You mentioned GPT, I think. You know, it would be such a miss if we didn't get a golden nugget of how we're using ChatGPT as an enabler. Like, you mentioned, obviously, content creation. How has it changed your role?
So I think there are a couple of things. I think the first is that it's still such like a novel, new, cool thing that the way to get your team's attention on something is to be like, hey, this came from ChatGPT. And so it almost becomes kind of clickbaity. I used it recently. We released a new piece of content. I put it into ChatGPT and said, write me a LinkedIn post about this content. And I did that a couple of different times, shared it with the team, and they all started posting about it on LinkedIn. I was like, okay, done. I'm doing this forever. The second thing is, sometimes you can deliver things in very much your own tone of voice with your own nuances and in ways that make sense to you, but actually don't really make sense to anybody else because they haven't experienced a specific thing you're referencing.
Mm-hmm.
And so quite often putting it into ChatGPT, you can go, okay, distill this down for me. And you're like, that's okay. What you've just distilled down is not what I had. That wasn't the message that I wanted to get across. So like, okay, rewrite this for me. And then the third way is, it's a really good starting point that give you an outline of whatever you're trying to create or deliver. You need to obviously add the nuances in for your own business. But if you're sat there going, I have no idea like what email copy this should be. I don't know what an inventive opening line is. I can't really give a subject line. Putting it into ChatGPT is great to just spark that little bit of an imagination at 5:29 on a Friday afternoon. It's become an aid to A, get attention from the team because they think it's cool and exciting, but also to help me make sure that the message I'm delivering is exactly what I wanted to deliver and not what I think I was delivering.
And then thirdly, as you mentioned, 24/7 creativity.
Yeah.
Boom. Well, there you have it. 3 GPT nuggets for enablers listening. George, really appreciate the time. Really enjoyed the conversation. And thank you for coming on to the show and discussing and sharing your perspective so generously.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great. Never did I think I'd be talking about agents for sales enablers.
Going to have to find you one after today's episode, I think. For everyone listening, go check out Georgina Baird on LinkedIn. So that's B-E-A-R-D, right?
Yeah.
Now that you're going to go find an agent, I mean, any other websites that you want to push people into to learn more?
I feel like this probably should be one, but no, LinkedIn is the best place to find me.
Awesome. George, really appreciate the time and look forward to hanging out again soon.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
By uncovering blind spots in performance, motivation, and skills, UHubs helps busy sales leaders at top SaaS companies to optimize their sales enablement so they can develop their reps and grow revenue. The UHub's Pulse platform visualizes each team's development needs, personalized upskilling, and provides data-driven coaching recommendations. These save sales managers 40-plus hours per quarter and help reps to ramp up 30% faster. Supercharge your sales team by booking a demo today.